Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to the Q2 FY18-19 earnings conference call of Glenmark Pharmaceuticals Limited. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touch-tone telephone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I would now like to hand the conference over to Mr. Jason D'Souza. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Thank you. Thank you, Janice. Welcome to Glenmark's Q2 earnings call. Before we begin the call, I would like to introduce the members of Glenmark's team that is there on the call. We have with us Glenn Saldanha, Chairman and Managing Director, Glenmark Pharmaceuticals; V.S. Mani, Executive Director and Chief Financial Officer, Glenmark Pharmaceuticals Limited; Robert Matzik, President, North America and API Business; and Utkarsh Gandhi, Senior Manager, Investor Relations. A quick review of the operations for the quarter ended September 30, 2018, and then I will hand it over to Bob for an overview on the North America API business and the specialty business. For the second quarter ended September 30, 2018, Glenmark's consolidated revenue was at $25,813 million, recording an increase of 14.39%. For the 6 months, Glenmark's consolidated revenue was at $47,469 million, recording an increase of 2.76%. Other revenue for the second quarter includes outlicensing income on account of the exclusive license arrangement signed with Harbour BioMed for the Greater China territory to develop, manufacture, and commercialize GBR1302. With this, I would like to hand it over to Bob for an update on the North America and the API business. Over to you, Bob.
Okay. Thank you, Jason, and thanks everyone for joining us today. The North American finished dosage form business, which includes Canada and the U.S., closed the third quarter with recorded revenues of $116.05 million or 8,102.47 million rupees, an increase of 11.44% for last year's corresponding quarter, which was $113.24 million or 7,270.95 million rupees. On the approval side, the U.S. was granted two approvals in Q2. They were as follows: Pulsivam hydrochloride for oral suspension, approved 16th of July 2018, and estradiol vaginal inserts, USP, 10 micrograms, approved 14th of September 2018. While no ANDA applications were filed during this quarter, the company plans to file two applications in the forthcoming quarter. In total, we have 12 ANDA approvals in fiscal year 2018-19, 11 final, and one tentative. Glenmark's marketing portfolio through September 30, 2018, consists of 139 generic products authorized for distribution in the U.S. market. The company currently has 61 applications pending in various stages of the approval process with the U.S. FDA, of which 29 are Paragraph IV applications. On the API side, global API business had a solid quarter. Revenues from the sale of API in regulated and semi-regulated markets globally was 2,512.08 million rupees for the quarter ending September 30, 2018, against 2,366.14 million rupees for the previous corresponding quarter, recording an increase of 6.17%. Sales were mainly contributed by Lercanidipine, Aprepitant, Etoricoxib, Olmesartan, and Perindopril. During the third quarter, Glenmark filed one U.S. DMF and two DMFs in the EU. And with that, I'll turn it back over to Jason to talk about the progress we're making on our innovative pipeline.
Thanks, Bob. Before the innovative pipeline, a quick wrap-up on the other businesses. The India business, sales from the formulation business in India for the second quarter was at $7,783.57 million, recording growth of 9.52%. As per IQVIA MAT September 2018, Glenmark is ranked 13th with a market share of 2.30%. Glenmark's India business has consistently grown ahead of industry, and Glenmark continues to remain one of the fastest-growing companies as per MAT September 2018. The India business strengthened its sales across its core therapy areas. The cardiac segment market share increased from 4.30% to 4.56%. The respiratory segment share rose from 4.63 to 4.69%. The anti-diabetic market segment changed from 1.62 to 1.63%. And the derma segment market share changed from 9.22 to 9.11%. During the second quarter, Glenmark announced that it has entered into a collaboration agreement with leading homegrown private equity firm True North for its orthopedic and pain management business for the India-Nepal market. Glenmark's orthopedic and pain management business, consisting of brands such as Esos, Bon-K2, ColaSmart and Lizolite, clocked revenues of $1,558 million. Under this collaboration, Glenmark's orthopedic and pain management business will be transferred to a new entity incorporated by True North, which will market the product portfolio in India and Nepal. Subsequent formalities related to the transaction were successfully completed in the second quarter. Glenmark's consumer care business in India. Glenmark's consumer care business in India grew in excess of 25% in the second quarter of FY19. As per MAT September 2018, Glenmark's leading brand Candid recorded 9% value growth and market share of about 55.8%. Furthermore, Candid Powder transformed itself from a brand to a brand franchise with the launch of two new products, Candid Active and Candid Renew, which have gained immediate share of voice. Moving on to the Africa, Asia and the CIS region. For the second quarter, revenue from this region was at $3,051 million, recording an increase of 21.03%. Glenmark's Russia business performed moderately in the second quarter. As according to IQVIA MAT September 2018 data, Glenmark's Russia business grew 3.8% versus overall market degrowth of minus 2.7% in units. Glenmark Russia continues to sustain its top 10 rank in the dermatology segment in Russia. The Asia-Africa region performed significantly well, growing in excess of 25% in the second quarter. The Asia region recorded strong growth sales growth, which was led by key subsidiaries such as Malaysia, Philippines, Myanmar, and Sri Lanka. The Glenmark Africa region also posted strong secondary sales growth in the second quarter, aided by robust growth in key markets such as Kenya and South Africa. Europe formulations. Glenmark's Europe operations for the second quarter was at $2,607.76 million, recording a growth of 30.37%. The Western European business continued expanding through increased penetration in the Nordic regions, Germany, Spain, and the Netherlands. The Nordic region recorded very high growth due to the launch of the generic version of Seretide Acuhaler in Sweden, Denmark, and Norway. Overall, the Western European business continues to record strong secondary sales growth in the second quarter. The Central Eastern region recorded good secondary sales growth during the second quarter too. The overall regional growth was led by multiple new products launches across all key markets. Glenmark launched 4 products in Germany and the Nordic countries, 2 products in UK, Netherlands, Germany and Spain. The company also launched 2 products each in the Czech and the Poland market. Malof Protect, an anti-malarial medication launched as a pharmacy license in the United Kingdom, has attained 20% volume market share. During the second quarter, Glenmark received marketing authorization for fluticasone salmeterol dry powder inhaler DPI, a generic version of GSK Seretide Acuhaler in Germany. Glenmark will sell the product in Germany under the name Salflutin. During the quarter, the company also announced that it has entered into a strategic exclusive licensing arrangement for marketing generic thiotropium bromide dry powder inhaler in Western Europe. Latin America. Glenmark's revenue from its Latin American and Caribbean operations was at $985 million, recording a decrease of 5.94%. Glenmark recorded good growth in constant currency. However, performance of the overall region was impacted due to currency devaluation in major markets. Just a quick update on the API business. During the second quarter, Glenmark received approval from the shareholders for the transfer of its API business to a wholly owned subsidiary entitled Glenmark Life Sciences Limited. Subsequently, a business purchase agreement for the transfer of the API business has also been executed between Glenmark Pharmaceuticals Limited and Glenmark Life Sciences Limited. The formalities related to the transfer of the business are ongoing and expected to be complete by Q4 FY19. This reorganization is targeted towards improving the service of our customers to enhance focus on the API business and building capabilities in research and development, manufacturing and marketing to accelerate growth in this business. R&D, Glenmark has a pipeline of 7 innovation assets, 5 in clinical, 2 in preclinical, and 2 specialty assets currently in development. In addition, Glenmark also has a pipeline of complex generics currently in various stages of development. Quarterly highlights, first on the innovation asset, Glenmark has two innovative assets currently in phase 2B studies, GBR830 and GRC27864. One asset entering phase 2B, GRC17536, and two oncology assets in phase 1B. Glenmark also has two assets in preclinical development, 39815 and MAP4K1 inhibitor. Of the seven assets, Glenmark has positive clinical proof of concept on two assets, GBR830 and GRC17536. The update on the oncology assets, GBR1302. GBR1302 phase 1 first-in-human study to determine maximum tolerated dose in patients with HER2-positive cancers is ongoing. Dose escalation continues at 9 participating clinical trial sites across Germany and the U.S. The study is currently enrolling patients in cohort 9 and will continue until MTD is reached. Pharmacokinetic data from the trial will be presented at ASMO Immunology Immuno-Oncology Congress 2018 in December 2018. GBR 1342, a phase 1 first-in-human study to determine MTD in patients with multiple myeloma is ongoing. The study is currently enrolling patients in cohort 8, with patients being already identified for enrollment into cohort 9. Glenmark also recently announced the decision to launch a phase 1 trial in solid tumors based on non-interventional human translational data. The company intends to file an IND application and initiate clinical trial in CY 2019. MAP4K1 inhibitor, Glenmark obtained exclusive global rights to a small molecule oncology compound based on antigen-presenting cell biology through a licensing arrangement signed with APC Therapeutics in 2017. Glenmark's lead compound is currently progressing well through preclinical studies, and the company is targeting to initiate clinical development in FY20. Immunology, GBR830. A phase 2B study of GBR830 in 392 patients has been initiated in adults with moderate to severe atopic dermatitis, with 30 trial sites actively open to enroll patients in the US and Canada. Glenmark has also initiated activities in the EU, and enrollment is expected to start by January 2019. Top-line results of the phase 2B study are expected to be available in Q3 FY20. Data from a phase 2A proof-of-concept study of GBR830 was presented at the Fall Clinical Dermatology Conference in Las Vegas in October 2018. In addition to atopic dermatitis, Glenmark is currently evaluating GBR830 for a study in patients with SLE. The company also has initiated preclinical ex vivo translational study to evaluate GBR830 in patients suffering from ulcerative colitis. GRC39815 is an NCE currently being evaluated as an inhaled compound for the possible treatment of COPD. The compound is currently in preclinical development, and the company plans to initiate a phase 1 study in H1 FY20. On the pain assets, GRC27864, a phase 2B study of GRC27864 in 624 patients with osteoarthritic pain is progressing as per plan, with 33 active sites in India and more than 100 patients recruited for the study. Glenmark plans to complete trial recruitment by end of FY19. Top-line results of the phase 2B study are expected to be available in H1 FY20. GRC17536, a small molecule, has been proven highly efficacious in treating inflammatory and neuropathic pain in animal models. GRC17536 has shown positive data in a phase 2A proof-of-concept study in patients with painful diabetic neuropathy conducted in Europe and India. Phase 2 enabling toxicology studies are currently ongoing, and the compound has shown a good safety profile supporting further development. Glenmark is targeting to initiate a phase 2B dose-ranging finding study in neuropathic pain in FY19-20. Quarterly highlights on the specialty assets. Glenmark has two specialty assets currently in development, which includes Ryaltris, Glenmark's first NDA filed in the US, and a biosimilar for Xolair. Ryaltris, during the second quarter, Glenmark announced the acceptance of the company's first NDA for Ryaltris, indicated for the treatment of seasonal allergic rhinitis in patients 12 years of age and older. The PDUFA target action date for completion of the FDA review is March 21, 2019. Ryaltris represents the continued commitment towards building a global branded business in the specialty respiratory segment. The company plans to commercialize Ryaltris in several key markets globally and has already initiated product filings in its key markets. GBR310, during the second quarter, Glenmark announced results from a phase 1 study that suggested similarity in pharmacokinetic, pharmacodynamic, safety and immunogenicity profiles between Glenmark's proposed biosimilar GBR310 and the reference product omalizumab marketed in the U.S. under the brand name Xolair. Glenmark expects to meet the U.S. FDA in H2 CY 2018 with the goal of advancing the development of GBR-310. The company targets to initiate the Phase 3 study in H1 FY20. On the generic assets, Glenmark has multiple complex generic assets, both in-house and in-license, currently in development, including two generics, respiratory inhalers. In-license assets, Glenmark has discontinued development of the following in-license complex generic assets, as the overall business case for these assets has significantly weakened due to the intense competitive landscape. Generic Abraxane, generic Nuvaring, generic Concerta, and generic Suboxone. Before we continue the call, a quick update on some of the financial numbers. Gross debt as on September 30, 2018 was at 4807 crores as compared to 4639 crores as on March 31, 2018. Net debt was at 3491 crores as on September 30, 2018 as compared to 3404 crores as on March 31, 2018. The MTM impact on net debt was to the extent of 450 crores. Thus, on a constant currency, net debt reduced for the organization by INR 363 crores in the first 6 months. Forex gain during the second quarter was account of the rupee depreciation was at INR 125 crores recorded in other income. Out-licensing income was INR 40 crores for the second quarter FY 2019, primarily due to the out-licensing deal of 1302 with Harbour Biomed for Greater China Territory. R&D expenditure for the second quarter was at 305 crores, which was 11.82% of net sales. R&D expenditure for the first half was at 550 crores, which was at 11.65% of net sales. Fixed asset addition for the first half was at 310 crores, and intangible assets was at 140 crores for H1 FY19, of which 120 crores was product in license primarily for the European region. Depreciation was at 79 crores for H1 FY20 and amortization was at 83 crores for H1 FY19. Inventory was at 2058 crores as compared to 2030 crores in March 31st, 2018. Receivables was at 2561 crores as compared to 2332 crores in March 31st, 2018. Payables was at 2160 crores as compared to 1870 crores in March 31st, 2018. Employee wages includes a one-time bonus incentive component in the second quarter, which was to the extent of INR 95 crores. Exceptional item during the quarter recorded in the consolidated income statement was a net income of 1671.82 million. At this point in time, we would like to inform all on the call that all our manufacturing facilities are compliant and we have received the EIRs for all our previous inspections. With this, we would like to open the floor for question and answers.
Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, we will now begin the question answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handset while asking a question. This is a reminder to all the participants in the conference. If you wish to ask a question, you may press star, then one. We would take the first question from the line of Neha Manpuria from JP Morgan. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for taking my question. First, on the U.S. business, we have seen a good improvement in the U.S., aided by the launches in the quarter. As we look ahead, you know, some of the launches have seen competition come through. How should we look at the, trajectory of the U.S. business? And a second question on that, you know, we saw Glenmark taking write-off of intangibles related to a lot of large generic in-licensed product, and these were so-called complex products. How are we looking at our R&D strategy when it comes to complex generics in the new environment given these large write-offs?
Yeah, I'll take the U.S. question. I think from a from a U.S. perspective, as we look at Q3, we'll expect it to be above Q2, and that's the guidance we're giving. And, you know, from here until the end of the year, we're expecting a couple of good approvals as well. And for the second part of the question, I'll let Glenn take that.
Yeah, so I think, Neha, the way we're looking at the U.S. business, I mean, the competitive intensity, especially on the complex generics, also has increased substantially over time. And we constantly reevaluate our portfolio to look at, you know, the competitive intensity, and then we make certain key strategic decisions around whether to continue development or to discontinue. And this is part of that exercise, right? Based on that, we've discontinued the development of these three or four complex generics. I think as a strategy, we have a very strong pipeline. We continue to have some very exciting launches. Yet this year, we have two big launches coming up. And I think, you know, we are much more focused on opportunities where we can be first or second to market as opposed to being part of the crowd, right, in most of our launches. And that's the way we're looking at the U.S. strategy.
Glenn, just on that, you know, for example, in respiratory, you mentioned in your release that you're working on two respiratory assets, you know, generic respiratory assets. You know, is there a risk of, you know, a similar situation like you've seen with the other large products in licensed products, especially with a product like Advair, where, you know, it's fast declining and, you know, the competition could be higher by the time we enter?
Well, Advair is, you know, given the changing landscape of Advair, I mean, it's something we constantly keep reevaluating as a project, right? Right now, we still continue the development, but you're right. I mean, the landscape is constantly changing as far as Advair goes. So Advair may not be the best example, but I think there are some other respiratory products that we have in development where we feel pretty comfortable we'll be in the first wave of launches, which would give us a good flip in the U.S. Business.
Understood. And my second question is on net debt. You know, we have seen some reduction in the quarter. You know, with the inflow from True North for the India business and, you know, now a potential, you know, sort of sale of the API business or stake sale of the API business, is there a chance, how should we look at net debt reduction going forward?
So I think net debt, the way we look at it, is not really an issue. Our debt will keep sliding between now and the end of the year. I mean, this time, unfortunately, because of the currency move, right, we, you know, the debt went up, but then we used the True North capital to knock it down again. So, but I think if you take a strategic view, we don't see net debt as an issue going forward. Mani, you want to add something?
No, that's fine. So on a broad basis, if you look at it in the current quarter, the net debt would have been, as earlier Jason pointed out, would have been much, much lower. But because of the rupee swings, it went up. But that's the nature of how it works.
Yeah. Understood. Thank you so much.
Thank you. I would like to remind participants, if you wish to ask a question, you may press star, then one on your touchtone telephone. Before we take the next question, a reminder to the participants, if you wish to ask a question, you may press star, then one. We would take the next question from the line of Abhishek Sharma from India Infoline. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for taking my question. I just had one question around the API business. Is there a plan to monetize the API business, you know, you know, what kind of structures are you looking at, and you know, at what stage are we presently? Thank you.
So publicly, we've stated that we're looking at a bringing in a minority investor right into the API business. So we're still on that process, right? And we are hoping to do something in the near future.
This would be a strategic partner that you're looking at, or?
I cannot give any more visibility other than saying that it will be a minority investor.
And this would be money into the company, or would this be like a secondary?
This would be like broadly, it will be infusion into, it will go into the parent, okay?
So the money to the parent.
Yeah, that's right.
Parent will be selling a stake.
Yes, somewhat like that. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks.
Thank you. This is a reminder to the participants. If you wish to ask a question, you may press star then one. Before we take the next question, a reminder to the participants. If you wish to ask a question, you may press star then one on your touchtone telephone. Next question is from the line of Sayan Mukherjee from Nomura. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for taking my question. You know, can you just throw some light on the U.S. Outlook? You mentioned you expect Q3 to be better than Q2. I mean, the existing launches, like especially Vagifem, was that a contributor this quarter, given that it came towards the end of the quarter? And how do you see that market, given that limited competition? And your earlier, you know, expectation on Velcol, have you been able to achieve what you expected in terms of market share and the pricing environment there?
Yeah, so I think on the estradiol, you'll see more, we'll have more an effect in Q3 because it was towards the end of Q2 that we had the launch. On the Colsevalm, I think we have our strategy down to defend what we currently have, and we'll look to stay about at the same level that we currently are moving forward.
Mm-hmm. So you're indicating that the market share is probably lower than what you had initially expected. Is that a right?
No. Shine, I think we are north of 25% on both these products in terms of market share. So I don't think we've actually our market share estimations have diminished or anything of that type.
Okay. And in general for the U.S. Launches, you know, I mean, you have a fair bit of competition coming in, Derm, et cetera, which has been one of the core of the pipeline. How should we see, you know, ramp up from these levels if I take a, let's say, two-year view? I mean, any color you can throw, would it be a lot granular, like, you know, each and every product will contribute, or there are some big opportunities which could have a meaningful element of growth in the next 2 years? Dependent on a few products to deliver that growth, or it would be more spread?
So I think, Shine, as I said, right, we've got some, our primary interest is in products where we can be in the first wave of launches, right? And that's what our entire focus is. And with that backdrop, right, we said we have a couple of good launches coming up this year, and then again next year and in the future. I mean, we've got a great pipeline of products coming through where we would be in the first wave of launches. I mean, that's the only visibility I can give you at this point.
Okay. No problem. And finally, one last question before I join back is on your experience, you know, with the inhaler launch in Europe so far. The growth numbers are good. So I'm just wondering, is it this product that is contributing? And especially for the German opportunity, how should we, you know, think about it? Any expectations there?
So I think, look, on the inhaler launch, right, I mean, first of all, our European business is not completely driven by the launch of the generic inhaler, right? We are still in the process of rolling it out in various countries, so it's still early days for the launch. As far as Germany goes, I think in the last, over the weekend or in the last 2-3 days, we received, you know, GSK was able to get a preliminary injunction in Germany against us, which we are right now trying to vacate as we speak. So I think we had not launched the product, or we had barely launched, started the launch phase. So it's not having any material impact to anything, but it's something which we will have to vacate before continuing the launch.
Okay, and this injunction is with respect to some patents at issue?
It's a trademark. Trademark.
Okay. And any timeline, Glenn, on this? By when we should be able to get a clarity?
I mean, we can't guide to a China. But again, I mean, the takeaway, our European growth will still continue to remain strong in Q3 and Q4 despite this injunction in Germany, because we have several other launches in Europe. So we don't see this as a material impact to any of our numbers for Europe or for the business as a whole.
Okay. Thank you, and I'll join back. Thanks.
Sure.
Thank you. Before we take the next question, a reminder to the participants. If you wish to ask a question, you may press star, then one. Before we take the next question, I would like to remind participants, if you wish to ask a question, you may press star, then one on your touchtone telephone. Next question is from the line of Nitin Agarwal from IDFC Securities. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking the question. Glenn, you know, over the last couple of years, our U.S. business hasn't, you know, versus the U.S. business, our non-U.S. exports have meaningfully, grown, especially in Europe as well as into the ROW markets, and this quarter is pretty much in line with that. I mean, in general, when you're looking at the business over, say, 2 to 3 year view, I mean, how are you looking at these different pieces now, the India, I mean, if you were to divide the business in India, U.S. and the non-U.S. export piece?
I think, I mean, you'll see growth across all three segments, Nitin. I think India, you know, we are strongly focused on derm, respiratory, cardiovascular, metabolic, and we have some great launches. I anticipate India growth to be very strong, particularly next year, because we have one or two major launches in India. So I think next year we will really outperform in the India business. If I look at the U.S., you know, clearly our focus is, in addition to the generics and the generic growth, because of our low base in generics, we will continue to grow quarter over quarter, right, with every new launch that comes up. But we are also very focused on building a specialty business, which will play out starting next year with the launch of Ryaltris. So that's another big event for us in the U.S., and that should change the trajectory. In the rest of the world, I think you'll see growth pretty much across our different segments. We have some good launches coming up in Russia. We have some good launches in countries in Asia and Latin America. You know, now we've pretty much hit the bottom, and from here on, I mean, the only spoiler could be currency, but I think if you keep the currency aside, the market growth, even in emerging markets and in Europe, continues to be strong. So, I mean, we feel pretty good about the business at this point in terms of our growth going forward.
Okay. And secondly, on you know, from a profitability perspective, I mean, how do these three different broad pieces stack up? I mean, how low down is this non-US export piece right now? You know, as in terms of contribution to profitability versus the overall corporate profitability?
I think from a margin perspective, you know, they're all above the company average. I mean, I think if you add back, see, we are spending almost, I would say, 7-8% or NME and specialty, right? If you add that back, I mean, the company margins are north of 25%, right, in terms of EBITDA margins. So I think all our businesses are very, very profitable, right? And they all stack up, pre-R&D expenses of, 30-odd%, right? I think across the board, it's a good margin business overall for us.
Okay. And secondly, Jason, what was the inflow on that you booked in H1 on the slump sale for the India business?
Nitin, you're talking of the orthopedic?
Yeah, orthopedic business, yes.
Yeah. We got about 600 crores, yeah.
Okay. The entire 600 crores has been...
Obviously, there were, payments for severances, transaction costs. We had to part with some of the assets, etc. All that was there. That's how it
is. So the net inflow is 600 crores?
Yeah, I mean, 600 is a top number. Then obviously we have other transaction costs, severance pays, all that all comes lower, okay. Some of them are also paid in the quarter.
And Mani, what's the net inflow in the for H1 then for from this transaction?
So we got a net gain of about 350 crores primarily from this.
I mean, that's cash flow or this is a P&L impact?
100.
That's the, basically that is a P&L and broadly the cash flow will be a little higher than that. That's it.
Okay. And on CapEx, how are we looking at now? I mean, this year and the year going after?
CapEx, so far we've done about 310 crores in the basically tangible CapEx. So
700-800 crores is our average, Nitin. And I think next few years also will be, it may come off a little bit, but we'll be in the 700 crore mark, you know, overall.
And lastly, Glenn, on R&D, we did 515 H1. I mean, this is a run rate to sort of extrapolate for the second half also in going forward?
I think about 12% of revenues is what you should look at for the full year.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Before we take the next question, a reminder to the participants. If you wish to ask a question, you may press star then one on your touchtone telephone. Next question is from the line of Shyam Srinivasan from Goldman Sachs. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my question. This is Chandru in for Shyam. First question is on the U.S. business. I understand that Tacrolimus and Verachol have helped numbers this quarter. Just curious what the base business ex of these products has done QOQ and what is the level of base business erosion you're seeing on an annual basis?
Sorry, Glenn, I couldn't hear.
Okay, let me take that. So I think, I mean, the base business erosion is roughly around 10%, right? So on the core business. So I don't know if that helps.
Right, that's helpful. Thanks. Second question is on Multac or Dronidron, which is a product I think you'd spoken about a couple of years back. Could be a para 4 kind of opportunity in FY19 second half. So just wondering if there's any update on the litigatory status there and how we should think of that when we look at your FY19 ramp in the U.S. business.
I don't think we have any update on that specific product. And clearly it'll probably be a competitive situation. So.
Right. Thank you. Next question is on the products that you mentioned that you're discontinuing or development, the in-licensed products, Abraxane, etc. Just wondering if you could give us an estimate of what the sunk cost is there and if there's any recovery you might get for the in-licensing payments that you've made related to these products.
So we announced it, Shyam. We said that we had taken this in the consolidated P&L, which was to the extent of INR 1780.03 million.
Perfect. Thank you. And this last one on the exceptional gain this quarter, looks like the press release states the exceptional gain, net exceptional gain before tax at about 167 crores. So I'm just wondering if there's any tax that is paid on that item and what the post-tax gain we should consider on the net income line.
So you'll have to look at it two ways. You know, obviously in the standalone, you have a net gain and there is a tax element, which would be whatever, you know, the about 20% plus. And the consolidated, you've taken this write-down for intangibles. So on a broader basis, this is how you look at it.
Right. This last one is on Mupirocin. So I think a couple of quarters back, there was a competitor who got approval. But so far, at least on IMS numbers, we haven't seen any entry by that competitor. So just wondering how you're thinking about it going forward in the second half.
Yeah, we expect. Yeah, go ahead, Bob.
No, Bob, go ahead.
Yeah, we expect competition at a certain point, both. To date, we've seen nothing on it.
All right. Thank you very much and all the best.
Thank you. Before we take the next question, a reminder to the participants. If you wish to ask a question, you may press star then one. Next question is from the line of Chirag Dagli from HDFC Asset Management. Please go ahead.
Yes, sir. Thank you for the opportunity. And please excuse me if there is echo. I am actually logged on through cell phone. Am I audible?
Excuse me, sir. I'm so sorry to interrupt. May I please request you to use the handset mode?
I am using my hand.
Thank you.
Go ahead, Chirag. We can hear you.
Okay. So, sir, on these product discontinuations, on the four, for each of these products, if you can sort of give us a sense of what exactly has changed, Glenn. You know, is it that the pricing in the first wave has been far inferior than what you thought? Or is the number of competitors higher than what you initially envisaged? Or is it that in your own development plan, there has been some delay and hence you think, you know, when you enter the market, it may not be attractive?
So we do a complete portfolio review, Chirag, okay? And based on our portfolio review, one or two of them are related to products which are already commercial, right? So obviously Concerta is commercial, Suboxone and Novarine. But when we look at the competitive landscape and the timing that we would be able to enter the market, right, and when we map it against, you know, the estimated erosion that we see on these products, right, it just doesn't make rational sense to continue development. And that's why we pulled out.
So the change is the expected pricing environment.
Absolutely.
Okay. Fair point. And Jason, you gave out the depreciation and amortization number separately for the first half. Can you repeat those?
Yeah. So the depreciation was 79 crores and the amortization was 83 crores.
Was it? Okay, sir. Thank you so much. Best of luck.
Thank you. Before we take the next question, a reminder to the participants. If you wish to ask a question, you may press star then one. Next question is from the line of Prakash Agarwal from Axis Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity. Just trying to understand R&D better. So if we hear most companies' commentary, you know, everybody's talking about rationalizing, especially the generics piece. I understand we have a rich pipeline on the specialty side. So, you know, how's the mix changing versus last 2 years now? And have you also looked at rationalizing the generics ANDA pipeline or withdrawing some of the ANDAs?
Sorry, so Prakash, we just mentioned the three or four ANDAs that we've...
So that was in license that you bought. I'm talking about in-house development, sir.
Well, in-house we keep doing, we keep rationalizing our portfolio, we keep dropping products, we keep adding products. I mean, that's all part of the ongoing portfolio review that we conduct, right, on a regular basis. I don't know if that's helpful.
But in terms of the share that you are doing now, generics versus innovative stroke specialty?
I don't think the share has changed. We keep the same mix and the same share. But we keep rejigging the portfolio based on the competitive landscape and the way we are in the development.
The last time I think you mentioned 40% generics or something like that. Exactly. Versus 50-50
correct.
Earlier.
Correct. Absolutely.
That's correct.
Okay. So that would be likely the case for a couple of next couple of years, or you think specialty as you know, these developments pick up, it would require, you know, as a percentage moves up and as a percentage of sales, you'll probably be around 12%.
Correct.
I'm talking about 2021.
That's correct.
Okay. And secondly, on the gross margins, which are pretty steady for last few quarters, trying to understand, you know, your run rate on the SG&A side and when do we start seeing, you know, our old EBITDA margins of 20%. Some outlook would be helpful.
We think margins will keep getting better as we gain more scale, number one. Number two is because of the currency impact, right, our margins will look better in the next few quarters, I'm suspecting, you know. Because, I mean, the rupee this time, obviously the P&L was at 68 or something like that, whereas the, you know, the rupee
whereas
is
the
at,
quarter end was about 72.
So. So margins will keep looking better as we go forward in the subsequent quarters.
But color on the SG&A expense, would that continue to expand given the fact that all the geographies are growing well and you will continue to need investments, and especially, you know, next year Realtris front field force and stuff like that?
I think SG&A as a whole, we will continue to get operating leverage because of the scale. Okay, so we anticipate SG&A to remain flat or come off a little bit as a percent to sales.
So what I understand, revenue growth will be higher than the SG&A, so that it results
exactly. There will be a margin expansion as we go along.
Yeah. And lastly, on U.S. outlook, you mentioned about a couple of quarters, which will be better than Q2, given that you have a couple of products expected. But any color for 20, you know, because 2021, 22, we pegged in these products a little bit on this side. But how many launches and approvals are you expecting for 20? If you can give broad color, that will be helpful.
I think every year we launch about 12 plus products, right? That will pretty much sustain, you know, what we anticipate the run rate of launches will be similar.
That would be good enough to, you know, because you are reaching a good base, and that would be good enough to do a 10-12% kind of growth?
I can't comment on that, Prakash, for next year. Everything depends on how the operating landscape plays out. Going forward, we can only give you visibility for the next few quarters as far as the Q over Q growth, right? For next full year, I mean, I would anticipate the generic business to be maybe single digit, right, for next year in terms
the
of
growth.
Yeah.
Perfect. Great. Thank you and all the best.
Thank you. Before we take the next question, I would like to remind participants, if you wish to ask a question, you may press star, then one. Next question is from the line of Aditya Khemka from TSC BlackRock. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks for the opportunity. Glenn, a couple of questions on, you know, what this withdrawal from some complex generics implies. So basically, as you mentioned to the previous participant, you basically anticipate a very a most severe competitive landscape than you were originally anticipating, which would lead to probably lower realizations and lower ROE. Is that the case with these four products in particular, or are you seeing a sort of a similar trend across many complex generics that you were originally hoping of developing and sort of making a good return on?
I think, Aditya, this is the, you know, the generic landscape is not easy, right? I mean, the whole environment is such that you're seeing more and more competition on virtually every product. So automatically, you know, when we do a portfolio review, right, some of the products we think are less attractive, right? And that's why we've taken these four out of the development grid. I'm sure going forward also there will be a few which may come up. But that's just the operating reality. And if we can't do the development in a timely manner, we will have to take some strong decisions, right?
Right. So it isn't just a function of the competitive landscape. It's also a function of how soon you can hit the market. Is it fair to assess that your development of these pipeline projects was probably not in a timely fashion as we would have originally anticipated?
Possible in some cases, but I think the bulk of it is on account of the operating environment.
Got it. Okay, fair enough. On the other side, Glenn, what we have been understanding from a few companies, because of, you know, sort of contracting supply in the plain vanilla segment, and again, this is not a carpet statement, particular products in the plain vanilla segment for now are seeing contracting supplies, and that is helping the price bit, as in people are saying that prices are not falling anymore, if not increasing. Is that something you have seen in your base business as well?
Yeah. Then I'll
take go ahead, Bob.
I think, you know, we're seeing selective opportunities for price increases, but nothing like it might have been several years ago.
Right, but if you were to, Bob, segregate your business into, you know, slightly more complex products that you currently market, including, let's say, a colsevelin, or you know, any other complex product, amupirocin, versus you know your base business, which would be fairly competitive already and would be largely plain vanilla oral solids. Could you give us some sense on how the price erosion on these two segments have behaved over the past quarter?
I think overall, I mean, it's been around 10%. I think some of the more specialized stuff has been a bit lower. But in general, I mean, we're, you know, the some of the opportunities for price increases, it's more some product-specific issues versus whether it's a complex generic or you know, a simple oral solid.
Got it. And again, on your guidance on the R&D spend of being 12% of revenue, so could we take a similar number when it comes to your FY 20 or 21 projections?
Yes, Aditya.
And this would include your Xolair biosimilar phase 3 if it goes to that?
So right now, we continue to maintain the same guidance, right?
Fair enough. Okay. Mani, sir, how do we manage the currency of these various geographies? So, for instance, what I wanted to understand was this rupee depreciation that happened versus the USD. Would the full benefit of that depreciation be reflected in this quarter, or we had hedges and therefore the benefit would reflect?
No, we, as a policy, we don't hedge. Okay. So, I mean, the rupee depreciation, whatever happens in terms of the business, you will, I mean, if assuming rupee remains at 72 plus, you will see the benefit in the next couple of quarters, because then you will get the full benefit of the rupee.
For the full quarter. Huh.
Yeah, for the full quarter. Whereas in the past quarters, the average rate at which we got is about 68. So that wasn't too much compared to the base rate that we had.
Fair enough. Is the policy similar across geographies, so let's say Russia,
yeah,
Europe?
Yeah, because some of the geographies outside, the, even if you even imagine hedging, the cost is too high. You wouldn't, probably
right.
Doesn't make sense in doing that.
Okay. And Glenn, on the Chinese API price situation, has the situation stabilized somewhat in terms of price inflation of raw materials, or is it still inflating?
Well, I think... I mean, right now it seems to be stabilizing, and our guess is by Q3, you know, you should see some stability in the price inflation.
Right. Have we changed our procurement strategy from a more Chinese-oriented procurement to somewhat indigenous procurement? If yes, what is the cost differential that you are paying there?
It's very marginal. We have changed. Obviously, we relook at our procurement consistently, but I don't think from an impact perspective, we are seeing a significant impact.
Right. And sorry, my last question is on the India business strategy. Glenn, you mentioned that next year can be significant growth over this year because you're launching some couple of very big products. What I wanted to understand from you is, given the government's stance on the fixed dose combinations and, you know, the irrational combinations and the MNC is now pursuing the patenting strategy more aggressively, many companies, it seems, are not been doing very well on the India front in terms of growth rates and for the past two quarters or so. What is your take on how this business can grow from this point onwards, and what will be the key strategy? How will you grow this business in the absence of the ability of making fixed dose combinations?
Well, I think, Aditya, fixed dose combinations have virtually no impact on our current business. So we see, you know, very strong growth coming from dermatology, respiratory, cardiovascular, and metabolic. In fact, you know, we think we are anticipating some great product approvals which can be transformational, particularly in the diabetes space. So, you know, the next year or 2 years looks very strong for us as far as India goes.
Right. So the strategy is going to be what? Because we don't invent products, right? So we either copy what is existing for the MNC pharma companies and they go off patent, or we in-license products from some companies that are not currently present in India. Are these two levers enough to drive like a 15% growth in India for the foreseeable 3 to 5 years?
We think so. In addition, of course, our OTC franchise, right? I would add to that, right? So between these three levers, right, I think the OTC business, are we've done great amount of in-licensing. You know, the Akinzio, the product we in-licensed from Helsin, continues to do well. So we've got a bunch of things in the works as far as in-licensing goes. And of course, there is some of products going off patent. And of course, there are some combinations also. I would put all of that in the mix, right? And that's what gives us the confidence that I think the next 2-3 years looks very strong for India.
Right. Sorry, Glenn, one follow-up on this as well. So on the OTC side, can you talk a bit about what we are doing currently? What is the size of the OTC business in India? What are the growth levers that you are looking at? And what is the profitability of that segment? Because I understand the advertising and promotion costs would be upfront and the revenue sort of come later.
The OTC business is a 200 plus crore business for us. Just three brands, Candid Powder, V-Wash, the franchise, and Scalp Shampoo. We continue to, you know, that business is seeing 25-30% growth. So we think the growth will continue to remain very strong. The margins, we've been investing in this for the last, I would say, 3 to 4 or 5 years. And every year we see margin improvements. So you're looking at, you know, mid-teen margins continuously improving on a consistent basis, right? So every year you will see the margin improvements coming through. So it's a strong business for us.
Got it. Thanks, fellow gentlemen. Thanks for taking my question. All the best.
Thank you. Before we take the next question, a reminder to the participants. If you wish to ask a question, you may press star, then one. Next question is from the line of Anubhav Agarwal from Credit Suisse. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. Just question on this four products that we discontinued. We spent about 178 crores. The question is, if we have continued the development of this, how much incremental spend was required to complete them?
I mean, the spends would be substantial, Anubhav, right, for given where we were at in the development. So, I mean, that's the reason why it just didn't make any strategic sense to continue.
I remember our earlier discussion, like per molecule, the spend would not have been more than $10 million here, right? I mean, we already spent $25 million on four products, so that's why I was asking that maybe the spend incrementally would have been 2x of what we have spent so far, or it could have been even higher.
So some of our competitors, Anubhav, have paid, you know, close to $350 million for four products, right? So you should, I mean, just keep those benchmarks. These complex generics can be substantial in terms of the spends. So, I think when we took a call, it was purely a strategic call based on the pricing environment that exists versus what return we would make, right, on these products. I mean, that's the only visibility we can give you, Anubhav.
Anubhav, also just remember one thing, that the expenditure that we have done on these products also includes upfront payments that we've made to the in-licensing partners.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Sure. Thank you. Thank you, guys.
Thank you. Before we take the next question, a reminder to the participants. If you wish to ask a question, you may press star, then one. We will take the next question from the line of Saion Mukherjee from Nomura. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for the follow-up. One question on the, you know, the out-licensing deal with Harbour Biomed for GBR-1302. Just wondering, what's the timeline you see for this product for registration in China?
So right now, Anubhav, Harbour is filing their IND for initiating some clinical trials in China. And in China, we think, you know, there's an accelerated approval process, right, for oncology products. So it could be pretty quick. I mean, I can't comment specifically on a specific timeline, but it could be much faster than most of the other geographies.
Okay. I mean, in 2 years, you think it's possible to do the file? I mean, given the extent of trial that is required.
I mean, 2 years is very aggressive, but you know, China is constantly evolving, Shine, so we don't know how it's going to play out.
Okay. And a general question on, you know, this out-licensing strategy. Because, Glenn, the thing is, mentioned about 7 to 8% of sales is going into specialty and innovation. So that's a big drag on the P&L. How do you think about this out-licensing strategy, which gives you the cash flow, in a way, you know, to make this business self-sustainable? I mean, are there any thoughts around that? There's a significant drag on the P&L.
We clearly recognize that, Shyam, and, we are aggressively working on various partnerships for the innovation pipeline.
So we would we can expect more licensing deals like these, you know, those smaller ones for smaller geographies for all your other products.
And I think you should
be a constant phenomena, because we haven't seen, you know, deals very frequently. That's the
sure. I think you should expect both smaller deals and larger deals both happening right in the next 12 to 18 months.
Okay.
On the pipeline.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that was the last question. I would now like to hand the conference over to Mr. Jason D'Souza for his closing comments.
Thank you. Before we end the call, we'd like to read out the disclaimer. The information, statement, and analysis made in this document during the call describing company's objectives, projections, and estimates are forward-looking statements and progressive within the meaning of applicable security laws and regulation. The analysis contained herein is based on numerous assumptions. Actual results may vary from those expressed or implied depending upon economic conditions, government policies, and other incidental factors. No representation or warranty, either expressed or implied, is provided in relation to this presentation. This presentation should not be regarded by recipients as a substitute for the exercise of their own judgment. With this, we would like to end the second quarter of Glenmark's earnings call. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of Glenmark Pharmaceuticals Limited, we conclude today's conference. Thank you all for joining us. You may disconnect your lines now. Thank you.